John Flansburgh and John Linnell, the musical duo known as They Might Be Giants, are credited with inventing the genre of nerd rock. They've sustained their innovating musical collaboration for more than two decades, and in recent years they've expanded their demographic reach all the way to the pre-kindergarten set. They have two new albums out, The Else for Adults, and Here Come the 1-2-3s for Kids, and you can decide for yourself which speaks to you. The inner kid and the grown-up in me likes them both. It gives me great pleasure to welcome John and John back to the show.
Hi. Hello. Happy New Year.
You've been quoted. That's already old news,
but
John.
We haven't, you know, I haven't seen you in a while.
You've been quoted as saying that you have a nice kind of fame. What do you mean by that?
Oh, that was in this New Yorker
you said
thing.
That,
I said that, so I can speak to that. First, I want to say that we're making some tremendous headway with this nerd rock thing.
Is that already passé?
No, I think it's, you know, for us, it's just, it's probably a generational thing because people, you know, kids today, they have a very positive idea of, you know, being a nerd or a geek or like, you know, geeking out is something that's like you're enthusiastic about it. But for us, it basically was like the words muttered like under the breath of the bully, you know, in junior high school. Like it seems like a diss.
Well, but, that's before computers made nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
To something very positive.
Yeah, we're kind of analog guys. But that was the nice kind of fame thing was basically said, you know, I guess, you know, part of it is New York City is a great place to be a little bit notorious because you because people are, they're just kind of cool about it, you know. It's we don't have to hide from anybody. We don't have to, you know, from the very beginning, we actually tried our best to keep the topic, the songs, and keep, you know, the musical output be the subject, and that has really been turned out to be a really good strategy because it's not about our biography, you know. Like so much musical stuff is just completely wrapped up in the persona of the person, and then it just becomes their rise and fall and all this drama. And for us, it's like, you know, we just want to write songs.
Well, you're not the sorts of rock stars who could expect to get a lot of play on Page Six. On the other hand, you've lasted a lot longer than the Beatles and pretty much any other group.
If only they could see inside our minds.
Really? Then they would really be frightened?
Yeah, it would be Page Six and Seven.
Well, what about you've done a number of things for kids over the years because you had kids, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just writing songs for kids?
Well,
or because you in Brooklyn and Dan Zane's in Brooklyn, there's this thing about people who write rock songs.
Dan Zane.
I didn't mean that.
We were just looking to chisel out some market share from Dan Zane.
You know, the whole thing about the kids' music is we didn't really have a plan to be a kids' act. You know, we did it as sort of a side project while we were doing a lot of other stuff.
Like you do like a Christmas album or something.
It
was a one-off.
It was a one-off. Our CD No, which came out 8 years ago, I guess. You know, we were just really startled by the response that it got because we'd put out an artistically integral adult, you know, highly calculated, you know, our best work kind of rock record the same year, and it was outsold like 2-1 by the kids' record. So we suddenly thought, oh, I guess we have this other job now. You know, it was not something we were fantasizing about for ourselves.
Well, what happens at concerts? Do people bring their toddlers?
Well, that has proved to be problematic because the parents that think taking children to bars are exactly the wrong ones to be making that decision. Basically, we're doing a show at the Beacon in I guess a week or so, and you know, that's a theater, and that'll be an adult show. It's extremely loud. There's no dancing there, but you know, still, I think, you know, when we do kids shows, they're like special events. It's like it's no secret. We have our regular live performances is swear-tastic, and you know, we're in places that just shouldn't be kids, and usually at a time when kids shouldn't be up.
But you know, for a group that a group two guys,
mm-hmm. oh well,
but
we, group we got of a two great, guys, got a great band.
Who plan to be together for a very long time. This
yeah.
can be seen as a very brilliant tactic because you teach them the ABCs and then later...
Yeah,
You know, when they grow up, they want to come into the other country.
Yeah, I guess those kids maybe haven't gotten old enough yet for us to test that theory, but there are kids who are, you know, in their teens now who saw us they saw our work on Tiny Toons like 17 years ago or whenever that was.
Yeah.
I guess they're in their 20s by now. So that does seem to play out to some extent, yeah.
And it wasn't
something we planned. You know, we were not calculating it.
And then there was also the song that wound up on The Simpsons, which I gather you didn't know in advance was going to happen?
Well, you know, in the... the people at Elektra have got a lot of other bigger things to worry about than notifying us of license, you know, in the circular firing squad that is the music industry today. There's a lot of
well, it didn't mean money to you, didn't it?
Oh, I mean, I guess I, you know,
hey guys,
I guess,
isn't we this never, exciting?
You know, half that stuff you just you know. We're just like every other bunch of musicians. We don't know what's going on.
So, when did you find out that?
Literally after it aired.
I think my son told me about it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, they played your song on that.
Yeah.
Well, I can't think of a clearer indication that you've made it than being featured on The Simpsons.
It's exciting. You know, there's lots of things. You know, we've done a lot of things that are kind of mind bending. You know, I mean,
well, you were with Dunkin' Donuts before Rachel Ray.
Exactly.
That's right. We beat Rachel Ray.
No, we did the theme for the new Mickey Mouse Clubhouse show a little while ago. And that it just seems completely, you know, outside of like, it's not even, I don't know. It's just a different idea.
And you also did a musical accompaniment to McSweeney's magazine. How do you write?
Yeah.
How do you score a magazine?
That was Dave Eggers' dream. He had a very psychedelic dream about how to do that issue and approached us. And you know, we were fans, so it was easy to say yes, even though we had no idea what he was talking about.
But you, in the end, that's part of the challenge, isn't it? Trying to figure out what somebody's talking about.
I think
and
often
then
when
it come alive.
Yeah, when something is so ill-defined and unclear, it's a great opening for us. You know, like a lot of our best gigs are like that. Like, you know, do one of those like purple upside down cloudscape kind
yeah.
of things.
We've gotten into doing more outside work, like, you know, for you know, just basic reason, you know, for as a way to not always have to support ourselves playing on the road, but also just as a creative thing. You know, it's interesting. I mean, the Dunkin' Donuts thing is an interesting challenge for us because all those commercials start there's the songs are the first thing that's done, so we have a very, you know, it's very wide open. You know, sometimes the script is literally a word,
like you set the tone in a sense.
Yeah, and that's a very sweet place to be in as a composer for, you know, collaborating on these things. It's usually you come in at the end and typically they're really asking you to fix something that isn't working in some other way, and that usually only yields somewhat okay results, you know, for the work for hire musician.
But you also it also suggests that this collaboration works quite smoothly. Is that true?
Our collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. We you know, I think in a funny way we think alike and we also understand each other's abilities well enough that, you know, we completely sync up when we're, and you know, we have fights about stuff, but I think it's like actually productive fighting, which is really unusual in the rock world, you know, instead
well,
of time
neither
stopping.
Of you ever hooked up with Yoko Ono, but you did.
I don't know what you mean by that.
I want to hear that story, Lenny.
Isn't that what broke up the Beatles?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, right.
Well, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Yoko, if you're listening,
I like Yoko Ono's albums. I have to go on the record. I you know, the personality parade, I'll leave behind.
Let's get back to writing for kids. Mm-hmm. First of all, my guests are John Flansburgh and John Linnell. They might be giants, the only group that ever had the chutzpah to name itself after a George C. Scott movie that the critics hated.
You haven't heard about this new indie band, Patton? They're awesome.
A lot of people try to do things, fashion things for kids. I think after Harry Potter came out, there must have been 1,000 novelists who said, "Oh, I'm going to do something."
Sure.
And it's harder than you think.
Well, I suppose we don't really try to, we don't really edit our sensibility for kids. We just take out the, as John said, the swear words, and we don't include the really dark material. Although we've written songs that were supposed to be for kids that we realized were inappropriate
too dark.
And just
yeah.
got rid of them.
Well, you've written a lot of dark songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They often sound real perky, and then you listen to the lyrics right. and think, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself.
When we first started doing No, I mean, No was a big event for us because we agreed to do the album, and they actually brought in a consultant, like an educational consultant. And the first conversation we had was, you know, we were thinking of calling the album No, because like little kids mm-hmm. can really, you know, that's like a favorite word to them. And they're just like, no, you know, you're not.
You don't want to encourage
that. You can't do that. And it was,
it's too negative.
Yeah. And it was a useful conversation because it made us realize very quickly that we didn't want to have any more conversations like that with uh-huh. anybody. And we pretty much shut off all, you know, good advice, bad advice, and just kind of followed our own impulses with it. And I think that has helped with the kids stuff. It's there's too much people, you know, I actually worked in educational stuff for kids when I was in my 20s, and that world, people overthink stuff way too much. Mm. Kids can deal with a lot of stuff. And
this record is aimed at teaching them math.
Well, it's about
the,
math.
That's
here come
the
one,
story,
two,
yeah.
threes.
It's yeah. about numbers.
Yeah,
it's a celebration of numbers.
It's a celebration of numbers.
You said
really.
it's a cover story, John.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we've got into this thing with Disney of doing these supposedly educational things, but I think that, well, I mean, more in the case of the ABCs, kids just automatically suck up the ABCs. They don't need a DVD to explain the alphabet to them, really. But it's a great pretext for us to just come up with entertainment for kids, which I think really is the. That's job number one.
But you don't change the way you approach a melody, do you?
Not at all. No.
I think,
and the arrangements yeah. are fairly similar.
And often, you know, kind of full-blooded. We were actually, you know, talking to Fren in the hall about, you know, there is this notion of Rafi and the very gentle kids' music, which I think I'm surprised that kids respond to. But, you know, I grew up, you know, the Beatles were my... you know, primary musical source as a 5-year-old. I was very, you know, in that spell. But I think kids appreciate the actual rhythm as much as anything else. You know, the songs that really have, you know, some driving beat to them. You know, you just see kids respond to that, and it's as natural as anything else.
But you also are right. The kids love things that go against what child psychologists say is good for them. So if you say no, you do a thing about no, it kind of, they get excited about it. They feel connected to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again, you did write the Dr. Evil song, so...
I think kids
you
like that
Dr.
One
Evil
too.
To Dr. No, I don't know. It's, right. It all is tying together for me here, and I suspect there's a conspiracy involved.
Well, the other thing is, I think like in songwriting generally for us, there's something maybe undefinable that's just recognized as a good idea. You know, that's something John and I both say, oh, that's good. We couldn't exactly say why. And I think even kids can recognize, you know, in other words, they're just as susceptible of those things.
Well, we should talk for a moment about the Else, the
sure.
adult record.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On both records, we actually worked with the Dust Brothers. They produced about half of the Else, and we worked with Pat Dillett, our long-term collaborator, producer, engineer on the whole project. But that came out this last summer of last year, and we've pretty much been on the road as if we were young men ever since. And it's just dizzying, Lenny. I can't.
Do you like doing the tour?
Well, I'll tell you what I love is I love this whole podcast thing because I can be away from home and listen to WNYC on the tour bus, which I do dutifully every day. I just wish they were longer because
they
put the 20-minute like best of Lenny Lopate thing on there.
Well,
but
the
I think
complete
you could bump
show
it up to 40 or 60.
Well, that's not my decision, but the complete show is on XM. Did you know that?
Oh,
See, we don't have the XM on the tour. We just have
you
got to
get
the
internet
podcast. We do like the podcast. Yeah. The podcasts are great on the media anytime you want it. I mean, life is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. You have your choice. You can get the Else or Here Come the 1-2-3s by They Might Be Giants, John Flansburgh and John Linnell. And we're going to go out with something called The Mesopotamians. You want to tell
terrific.
Us a little bit about that?
This is a song off the Else. It's the last song, and it's about it's sort of ideas like a fictitious rock band from the ancient Near East. It just sort of smashes two ideas together that are kind of about the notion of obscurity and being forgotten. That's basically it.
Well, I thank you both so much for being with us again.
Always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure for me to talk to you, and let's listen to a little bit from of the Mesopotamians.